Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show here on 102.7 FM Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, October the 22nd, 2010. I am your co-host, Allison Cole, and I'm joined here today by my co-host, Joanne Chang.
Good afternoon.
And our guest co-host, Chris, isn't here today. But we also have our technician maniac, Dan, who is running the controls, and I thank you so much for what you're doing right now, mm-hmm. Dan.
Yeah.
On today's show, we have a very special guest with us. We have a feature interview with John Robbins, who you may know as being the best-selling author of such books as Diet for a New America and The Food Revolution. Diet for a New America was a book that was groundbreaking for its time in 1987 and exposed the world to the connections between meat, dairy, and eggs in our health, and our health, the environment, and animal suffering. I've heard of many, many people who have said that they went vegetarian after reading this book, or that it had a profound effect on them on how they now think about the consequences of our food choices. And this book is still very relevant to today's world. From there, John went on to found the international not-for-profit organization EarthSave, which happens to have a chapter here in Vancouver called EarthSave Canada. And in fact, John Robbins will be making a special appearance here in Vancouver this weekend as part of the EarthSave's gala fundraiser tomorrow evening, which also ties into their annual Taste of Health Vegetarian Food Festival, which happens tomorrow during the day. Before our interview with John, we'll actually be speaking with this year's Taste of Health coordinator, Teresa Tomek, to tell us about more about these two exciting events. John Robbins' latest book that just came out this year is called The New Good Life, Living Better Than Ever in an Age of Less, and I've been reading it since last week and have really been enjoying the advice that he has to give on this topic, drawing from his own experiences of going from riches to rags to riches to rags again. The book is divided into chapters that each prescribe ways of living frugally without sacrifice, and it's a book not only for those who want to save money, but who also want to tread more lightly on the earth, and certainly in the case where exploiting animals is involved. He dedicates a section of the book, for example, on how to eat better by spending less and by not exploiting animals. This part includes sections on a dozen nutritionally rich and inexpensive plant-based foods with recipes as well, such as for some of my favorite foods, which include lentils, quinoa, flax seeds, nutritional yeast, and sweet potatoes. It's an informative and enjoyable book to read, and John Robbins really has a great gift of the narrative, which he parlays so well into the telling of this book. He is a storyteller, and his books are always captivating to read. Anyways, you might be wondering where I'm leading with this, and yes, it is another book giveaway here on the Animal Voices Radio Show. We are giving away a copy of John Robbins' The New Good Life to a lucky listener. As usual, all you have to do to enter is visit our Facebook page called Animal Voices Vancouver and click on the Discussions tab where there is a topic started for this contest draw. Just enter your name there by next Friday at 9 a.m. and you'll have a chance to win this book, which we'll be drawing for on the show next Friday, October the 29th. And if you're not on Facebook, you can also just email us your entry by emailing radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. So good luck with that. And as of this morning, we already have two entries.
Quickly, that's very fast.
Yeah. So quickly, I want to speak about the membership drive that's currently running here at Vancouver Cooperative Radio. It's that time of the year again where we are kindly and eagerly asking you for your donations to support the Animal Voices show here on Co-op Radio. This radio station is a nonprofit cooperative run by the community and relies solely on your donations in order for it to keep running. So if you enjoy our programming and the news, perspectives, and interviews that we give you here on the topics of animal rights, we ask you to please show your monetary support. All you have to do is go to cooperadio.org and click on Donate Now to make your donation. And please make sure to indicate that this donation is for Animal Voices, as we need this money to stay on the air. With that said, we have our first interview on the phone here, which also coincides with our events segment. Our first interview today is with Teresa Tomek, who is the coordinator of this year's Taste of Health Vegetarian Food Festival in Vancouver, which is an annual event sponsored by the local nonprofit organization EarthSave Canada, and it takes place tomorrow, October 23rd. This year, EarthSave is also hosting a fundraiser gala in the evening after the Taste of Health, and Teresa will be speaking to us about that as well. Hello, Teresa, and welcome to the Animal Voices show.
Hi, Allison.
Welcome, Teresa.
Thank you for having me.
So before we discuss the two big events tomorrow, can you tell us about EarthSave Canada, when and how it started, and what the mission statement is of this organization?
Sure. So Earth Day Canada is a nonprofit educational organization, and we promote awareness about the consequences of our food choices, the environmental, ethical, and health consequences. And we believe that a move towards a plant-based diet is what is needed for a healthier all-around world. And Earth Save Canada actually, or Earth Save was started by John Robbins as a result of his book, The Diet for a New America. And a presentation he did in Vancouver in 1989 is actually what created the excitement that started the Vancouver chapter of Earth Save. So we've been around now since 1989 and still going strong.
And what type of outreach activities is Earth Save organized throughout the year?
We have a lot of different ways that we like to educate the public about our mission. We put out a lot of print material. We have a newsletter every month. We have a lot of different resources. We have a library here where mm-hmm. anyone can come and get books on vegetarian diets and all sorts of different topics. We're also very community-oriented, so we have a lot of things like potlucks and dine-outs and youth group and readers group, so that you know, our members can know each other and like-minded people can get together and discuss these important things.
And I know as of last year, I think all of those potlucks and dine-outs have been put on the meetup.com website.
Yeah.
So how can we, how can someone subscribe to that?
So, yeah, if you go to the earthsave.ca website, there's all the information you need there to sign up for any of our activities. And yes, we highly encourage people to come because they're a lot of fun and it's a good opportunity to try new restaurants in the city and meet new people. And we also do education outreach at schools. We're doing that more and more now, so that's another big thing Earth Save will be focusing on in the future.
And of course, Earth Save's major event for the year is the Taste of Health. So please tell us about the Taste of Health Festival happening tomorrow. It's the 12th annual Taste of Health of Earth Save Canada. And what can one expect to see and do at this day-long event tomorrow?
Yes, Taste of Health is our large year annual event. It's its 12th year now. And the goal of Taste of Health is exposing our attendees to innovations in the world of healthy food, particularly pertaining to a vegan and vegetarian diet. And we also have a lot of educational material. We promote local nonprofit organizations. And the goal is to come and try new foods and just have fun, meet people, and just leave inspired. And there's going to be over 30 exhibitors, and a lot of them will be sampling their products. So you can come try vegan baked goods, wheatgrass juice, organic teas and coffees, vegan snack foods, protein supplements, vegan yogurt, chef creations, lots of different kinds of things.
That sounds good. And I know that you always have workshops during the event as well. So can you describe some of the workshops that people can attend?
We have some very interesting workshops going on this year. We'll be having Rose Vassil come in and do a raw cooking demo, as well as Rob from Radha Yoga and Eatery will come in and do a live vegan cooking demo. And then we also have some very informative workshops. We have Tiana coming in and speaking about her life without plastics. She completely cut plastics out of her life, and just how that has affected her health and the health of the planet, how plastics affect our planet. And we have Bobby Palmer coming in and speaking about the alkaline diet, and Adam Hart coming in and speaking about the power of food, how you can your food choices can change you as a person and your health.
That all sounds great. So where is it being held, and what are the times, and how much is it to get in?
It's being held at the Vancouver Masonic Center. It's at 1495 West 8th, and it's just one block away from the corner of Granville and Broadway. And it's on the fourth floor of the building with beautiful views of the city and the mountains and the ocean. So that'll be a really nice touch. And it runs from 9:30 to 4:30. And for members of Earth Save, it is free to get in, and for children. And for everybody else, it's just $5.
So sounds like a pretty good deal.
Yeah.
Now, in the evening, there's going to be the Earth Save Gala event featuring keynote speaker John Robbins, who we have later on the show today. So can you tell us about this gala event and what people can expect to find there?
Yes, sure I can. The gala event is going to be starting at 7 p.m., and it's going to be a bit of a dressy affair. It'll be very nice, and we're going to have live comedy, some live music, and hors d'oeuvres and a chance for people to mingle and just talk. And we're going to have a balloon raffle as well, so it'll be a lot of fun. And it'll also be the last chance for everyone to bid on the excellent silent auction items we have. And for this, the tickets are just $30.
And where does the money go to for this? It is a fundraiser, right?
Yes, it is. All the money, we are a nonprofit organization, and this is one of our major fundraising events, so all the money goes to future education initiatives by EarthSave. It goes directly back into furthering our mission.
Excellent, and we're really excited to be seeing John Robbins there. It's really been a while since he's come to Vancouver, that's for sure. So what will John be speaking about at the gala?
Well, we don't know exactly what he's speaking about because he has this sort of approach where he likes to be inspired by the moment, so he doesn't like to commit to a certain topic, but I have a feeling he'll probably be touching on the topics of his new book, which you were talking about earlier. And, I mean, he always has an interesting way of tying in everything that affects our lives into protecting our earth and protecting the environment and, you know, just being healthy all around people.
Yeah, you know, I saw him speak in Portland several years ago, and you're right about his speaking style. It's just really casual, but he really is a storyteller, as I said before, and he's so eloquent and articulate. He really is a great speaker.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, I'm sure everyone will be just grasping at his words.
Yeah, so, he definitely has a way of people that see him speak want to see him again. I just had a call from someone who's flying in from Winnipeg because they want to see him speak so bad.
That's amazing.
Wow. Yeah.
This the event that I went to in Portland, there I counted the people and there were about 500 people there.
Wow.
And they all just went into the room like right before there were other speakers during the day. When it was time for John Robbins, the room just flooded and filled with people. So really looking forward to this event.
Definitely.
So at this time there are still tickets available for the gala, is that right?
Yes, there are. And you can buy them by calling me in the office at 604-731-5885 until about 6 p.m. today, or you can get them at the event. There'll still be some available, and I advise that you get them probably as early as possible tomorrow, as we are expecting them to sell out before the event.
And I just want to tell people too that if you've ever wanted to see John Robbins speak, now is the time. If you're in Vancouver, certainly that is, because he doesn't come here that often. It's a fundraiser for a good cause, and it's going to be a good time. So now is the time to call Teresa as soon as we're done on the phone with her. and to get your ticket. So thanks for coming on the show, Teresa, to speak to us about these two events happening in Vancouver tomorrow on October the 23rd. That's the Taste of Health Vegetarian Food Festival and the EarthSave Fundraiser Gala in the evening featuring John Robbins. So to find out more, people can go to your website, is that right?
Yes.
And what's the website?
It's www.earthsave.ca/tasteofhealth /taste of health.
Okay. Thanks so much for coming on the show, Teresa.
Thank you for having me. Look forward to seeing you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for that, Allison. That's quite an exciting interview. I'm definitely looking forward to that event tomorrow.
Yep. Once a year, remember?
Yeah, and yeah, I'm glad she said it's a dressy affair for the gala. Now I can wear my new dress. So.
Yay.
Yay.
And I'll be serving food there. So.
Oh, will you?
I will.
Excellent.
I'm
so you actually don't have to buy a ticket to go in.
That's right.
Oh, good job. I got my tickets way in advance. It's definitely going to be great.
That's wonderful. Yeah, I would definitely be going if I wasn't volunteering, but I always like to help out anyway. Mm-hmm. So I signed up for that.
Great.
So we've got our news.
Yeah, I just want to remind our listener right now, you're listening to Animal Voices on Co-op Radio 102.7 FM. On to the Animal Voices news. Ecorazi.com is reporting that St. Louis Cardinals manager Tony La Russa, who is also the co-founder of Animal Rescue Foundation, has lent himself to a newly released public service announcement in support of Proposition B in Missouri, a piece of legislation that would amend Missouri law to require large-scale dog breeding operations to provide each dog under their care with sufficient food, clean water, housing, and space. Necessary veterinary care, regular exercise, and adequate rest between breeding cycles. And you think this is probably already being done already, but no, there needs to be a legislation to tell people to do that. It's so sad. What's more, the measure would prohibit any breeder from having more than 50 breeding dogs for the purpose of selling their puppies as pets and create a misdemeanor crime for puppy mill cruelty to those who break the law.
How does a person have 50 dogs? Like, you can't treat them all right if it's one person owning 50 dogs, can
right?
You?
Well, you know, I was involved in a puppy mill bust, and this woman had 400 dogs in her backyard.
I just can't even fathom that. That must have been a large backyard, I'm hoping.
Yeah, well, it was a large backyard.
And
but
they're all
in
cages, right?
They were. Yeah. Some were running loose. Some were in shopping carts, and that's where they live for their entire life.
That's
so it's, you know,
cages.
Yeah, 50 is easy. You can cram them into a small space. So it's really sad. Thousands of dogs are crammed into small and filthy cages for their entire life, and these large-scale puppy mills, says La Russa, no responsible pet owner would ever treat an animal like this. It's cruel, it's inhumane, and we need to change it. Our next news from Boise, Idaho. After receiving a letter from PETA, the Idaho Transportation Department has agreed to add warning to its driver's manual about the danger of leaving cats and dogs in parked cars, particularly in hot or even just warm weather. If you remember, we had someone on the show to talk about leaving dogs in hot cars, and it happens every summer.
And it's a really serious situation.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the animals die within 10 minutes. In an email to PETA dated October 14th, Edward Pemble, ITD's driver service manager, wrote, "Since mention of this danger is already included in the Idaho driver manual as it relates to children left in vehicles, wording can be easily modified to include mention of the danger posed to pets as well. This change will be included in the manual and will be published in the spring of 2011. That's a really positive change. Death from heat stroke is slow, agonizing, and terrifying, says PETA Vice President Daphna. Ooh, I can't read her last name. By making the progressive and compassionate
Nakmanovich.
There you go, Allison. By making the progressive and compassionate decision to add a few words of warning to the driver's manual. Idaho has set an example for other states to follow and will help save animals' lives. Each year, PETA receives an alarming number of reports of dogs who have suffered heat stroke and died just this summer. Nevada and California decided to add the warning to their manuals. Dogs left in cars in the heat can suffer heat stroke and die in a matter of minutes because they're unable to regulate their body temperature by perspiring as humans do. They can only attempt to cool themselves by panting. On a 78 degree day, the temperature outside a parked car can soar to well over 100 degrees in just minutes. Dogs suffering from heat stroke struggle to escape the vehicle, often salivating heavily, losing control of their bladder and bowels, and clawing at the car window so violently that their paws often become bloodied. That's really sad. Do I have more time?
That's probably it for now, but I just wanted to mention, I was in Nevada last month and driving there, and it was 110 degrees at one point outside. So if you can imagine, and I mean, it was an inferno there.
Yeah.
If you can imagine how hot it could get
inside a car. It's pretty much an oven.
It was like an oven outside.
Right.
So if you can imagine how hot it would get inside.
Well, it would be literally like an oven inside.
Yeah. Thanks so much for that, Joanne. So our feature interview today is with John Robbins, most widely known for being the author of the international bestseller Diet for a New America and the founder of the nonprofit organization EarthSave, which strives to educate the public on the connections between meat, dairy, and eggs and the destruction to animals, our health, and the environment. John Robbins is currently one of the most popular bloggers of the Huffington Post. He's also the author of 6 bestsellers in total that have collectively sold more than 3 million copies and been translated into 26 languages. The only son of the founder of the Baskin-Robbins ice cream empire, John Robbins was groomed to follow in his father's footsteps, but chose to walk away from Baskin-Robbins and the immense wealth it represented to pursue the deeper American dream, the dream of a society at peace with its conscience because it respects and lives in harmony with all life forms. As an advocate for a compassionate and healthy way of life, John is the recipient of the Rachel Carson Award, the Albert Schweitzer Humanitarian Award, the Peace Abbey's Courage of Conscience Award, and the Green America's Lifetime Achievement Award.
We are honored to have Mr. John Robbins here on the show today. Hello, John, and welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show.
Thank you. Glad to be here with you.
You are probably best known for authoring the best-selling book, Diet for a New America, which was groundbreaking for its time in 1987. And even now, I would surmise that there are still millions of people out there that could stand to read this book and be informed on a myriad of issues pertaining to ethical, health, and environmental consequences of our food choices that would cause them to shift their way of thinking. And in fact, it's a book that I still highly recommend and give as gifts to people to read. I'm wondering how you would describe this book as having had an impact on people's lives, both yours and all those who have read the book.
Well, I'm very fortunate and privileged because so many people have responded so deeply to Diet for a New America, and actually The Food Revolution also, which was a subsequent book I wrote that's a little more up-to-date. But I think that the whole issue of taking animal cruelty seriously and realizing that the reason we need an animal rights movement is there are so many animal wrongs taking place. There's so much cruelty that's been institutionalized and mass-produced, really, into our industrialized food system. As a person of conscience, as a person who wants their life to be a statement of compassion, you have to challenge this. You have to think about it, reflect on it, and consider your food choices in terms of the impact on the animals involved. And up until Diet for New America, that really hadn't been a feature in the culture. And I'm grateful that the book served to enhance that discussion and help people take animal cruelty much more seriously than they had before.
That's definitely true. I'm sure it was the first time that many people were hearing of these issues. And I'm wondering, what was the impetus of your decision to invest such a large amount of time? You were an unknown author, unpublished author. You spent 2.5 years of your life writing this book. What made you want to write this book?
Well, every cell in my body wanted me to write it. Every part of my heart wanted me to write it. Because as I became familiar with the severity, the degree of it. I mean, you don't have to be an animal rights activist or a vegetarian to be appalled by the degree of cruelty that's involved in modern meat production if you see it. But you see, the industry doesn't want people to see it. They want to keep the veil over people's eyes. And I wanted to lift that veil. I want people to have the opportunity to see for themselves what's taking place so they could make whatever decision they might want to make, but from an informed place, because the industry just spreads so much propaganda and deceit and illusion and delusion. It's so full of feel-good messages when behind that there's something that feels really bad going on.
Yeah, that's definitely true. Now, many years later and several books later, you've just published a new book called The New Good Life, Living Better Than Ever in an Age of Less. And you use your life experiences to formulate the content in this book. You've seemed to have coined the term The New Good Life and say that it's about the joy of living with a purpose larger than consumption and about consuming less and consuming more intelligently. What do you have to say about society as we know it today, where people are consuming to no end and exploiting the planet and its living creatures?
Well, we've kind of become masters of the art of unconscious consumption. We buy things. For example, the food that we eat, we don't think about where it came from as a rule. We don't think about the farm workers who were involved, what their health experience has been as a result of the pesticide exposure. We don't think of what the agricultural systems are doing to the groundwater or to the climate. We don't think about the animals. You know, we just think about what it tastes like and what it costs right, and how convenient it is. That's the cultural norm. That's what we're trained to do. I actually think of it as a cultural trance, because it's virtually hypnotized in the degree of unconsciousness that we have. But many people now are beginning to question that and ask, what is going on? They want to be conscious about their consumption. And with that, you can reduce it to a tremendous extent because you focus on what really gives you value in your life, what really fuels your spirit and really gives you a quality of life rather than consuming and acquiring all kinds of extraneous stuff that you just really cost money, exhausts you financially, exhausts you emotionally, and leaves you empty.
You say that the new good life is a way of living with respect for yourself, others, and the life of this planet. Do you think we're going to reach a tipping point where exploitation of the life of this planet is going to have to drastically slow down and or come to a halt in order for our planet to survive?
Well, it obviously is going to have to stop. It's not sustainable, and something that is not sustainable is by definition not going to continue. But how it will stop, you know, if we were able as a global community, and for that matter even as a nation, to intelligently restrain our appetites and clarify our desires and learn to live in harmony with the limitations of the planet, with the resources of the planet, with the beauty of the planet, with our fellow species, with our fellow human beings and other cultures, we could do that. We could have an elegant slowing down and coming into sanity. But the forces economically are so entrenched that I don't see it happening. I would love it to happen. I advocate for it. I speak about it, and I dream for it. But I act in every way I can for it, and I try to help others to do the same. At the same time, I recognize we may not slow down in time. And the economic engine is predatory on the planet, and it's so polluting, and it's so damaging. And what is already done in terms of greenhouse gases, it's rather frightening.
I'm surprised to hear you say that, but in a way too, you know, I think we have to realize that it's not all going to be a happy picture, right? And people need to face realism. They need to face what is really going to happen. Now, you were once being groomed to be the heir of the Baskin-Robbins ice cream empire, which your father co-founded. Can you tell us what it was like growing up as a child with an ice cream cone-shaped swimming pool, all the ice cream you could ever eat, and living a life of monetary wealth that was all paid for by the dairy industry, and how you came to form your ideals where you rejected this lifestyle and what it stood for?
Well, you know, I grew up eating as much ice cream as probably anybody in the world, but I wasn't healthy, and neither were most of the members of my family. And there was a lot of people with weight problems, and my uncle, Bert Baskin, my dad's partner and brother-in-law, died of a heart attack in his early 50s. Mm-hmm. And he was a very big man, and he ate a lot of ice cream. And when he died, I asked my dad, "Do you think the amount of ice cream that he ate could have had anything to do with his fatal heart attack?" And my father glowered at me. He was very unhappy that I would ask that question and said, "No, his ticker just got tired and stopped working." My dad could not consider the possibility that there might be a link.
Right.
Because by that time, he had manufactured and sold more ice cream than any human being who had ever lived on this planet. He didn't want to think that the family product was harming anybody, much less that it might have contributed to the death of his beloved partner and brother-in-law, my uncle. But even though he couldn't consider that because of his standing in the culture and his business and so forth, I felt ethically obligated to consider that and take that question seriously. And I felt there could be a connection. I'm not saying a single ice cream cone is going to hurt anybody, but the more ice cream you eat, the more likely you are to have a heart attack. Ben Cohen, the founder and for many years co-owner of Ben & Jerry's, had a quintuple bypass in his late 40s. Mm-hmm. Ben Cohen's a beautiful man. He's a peace activist and is a wonderful human being, but he ate a lot of ice cream. And I didn't want to be involved in selling a product that would be undermining people's health. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're in the ice cream business, you want people to eat as much and buy as much as possible. And that would mean the most heart disease and obesity and high blood pressure and diabetes and all that. And I also was learning at the same time about the reality of the dairy industry's treatment of animals, of the cows and the calves that are born to those cows, because they have to be kept continually pregnant in order to keep them lactating, and therefore producing the milk that the industry profits from the sale of. So, and the more I learned about that and the cruelty involved in it, the less I wanted to have anything to do with it, other than to expose it and see it changed.
What are your thoughts about animal product brand marketing and its effect on society? For example, Baskin-Robbins' slogan was, "We make people happy." Is a positive slogan like this enough to sway the North American public into thinking that they are doing no harm by buying and consuming these products?
Well, you know, one company's slogan doesn't mean that much, but when you have many, many corporations, food companies, all of them collaborating in besieging people with a barrage of advertising that's saying, buy this, eat more, eat more, eat more, and never mentioning, always obscuring the reality of what's involved in the production of that food. You will never see an ad, for example, that says this product was made in a sweatshop. You will never see an ad that honestly says this animal product comes from an animal that lived in tortured conditions. That may be the truth. That is often the truth. But they won't tell you that, despite spending billions and billions and billions of dollars on advertising. They somehow manage, isn't it odd, that they never, ever reveal the reality of the animal's experience. And it's as if it didn't exist.
And even more odder is that people don't question it.
Well, that's why I appreciate being on your show, because I know you do question it and encourage people to question it. And I think I appreciate people who do question these things, because it makes your life sincere. It's an authentic thing to do. It's taking seriously the reality of our experience and of our impact on the world and on other beings. And I think to be an honest person with yourself, that's a requirement.
Yeah. Definitely. I think as human beings, we have an obligation to question and to know what we're doing in our lifestyle. What changes have you noticed in people's perception towards food and animals over the years of your lifetime? Do you think that the treatment of animals as food has been coming to the forefront more in recent years?
Well, yes, it has. And just to give an example, when I wrote Diet for a New America, which is now 23 years ago, there's no mention in the book of anything like free-range eggs or grass-fed beef or... and the reason that there's no mention of those products is they didn't exist 23 years ago. Now, those products are a step towards alleviating animal cruelty in the industry. They're actually, in many ways, a small step. But they are a step in the right direction, and they show that at least people are starting to think about it. Whether their actions are effective and fully expressive of their concerns is an open question. But at least people are starting to think about it, want their animal, if they're going to be animal products involved in their lives, want them to be from animals who have been as humanely raised as possible. Now, the industry often profits from greenwashing, from presenting an image that is deceitful, but as earth-friendly and humane and green and also and but we need to be able to hold these people's feet to the fire and make sure that any claims they make are accurate, not misleading. And represent sincere and effective actions on behalf of animals.
We're a fast food nation, and some people think that eating healthy and plant-based is too expensive compared to eating a meat-centered diet. It's true that you can buy a McDonald's hamburger for a buck or two, but what message do you have for people who think this way, who probably have never really considered that eating vegan, plant-based, could be affordable for those on a budget? And what advice do you have for eating that is both healthy and inexpensive?
Well, first of all, the reason that it's cheap to eat a McDonald's hamburger, for example, is because of the very distorted subsidies that our governments have put into place. We have brought the price of soybeans and corn down considerably through these subsidies, but the soy and corn, it's not going into people eating popcorn and tofu. And these are the basic feedstuffs in factory farms fed to hogs and cattle and the other animals involved. So what it does is it brings, and the main cost of running these operations is the feed. So by subsidizing the feed, we bring the price down of the final product, and so the hamburger is cheap, or so it seems. But the McDonald's and the other companies have just learned to offload the real costs onto the environment, onto public health. And for individuals and families, it's important to realize that your health is a significant part of your wealth. And if you do become ill, the idea that there'll be a pill for every ill, that the doctor, the MD stands for medical deity, and the doctor will always have an answer, I'm sorry, it doesn't work that way. We all really know that, but we sometimes want to push that knowing away so that we can continue to indulge our bad habits. But the truth is that eating healthfully and getting lots of fresh vegetables in your diet, a plant-strong diet, it may seem more costly at the point of purchase, but in the long run, the quality of life that it gives you, the enhanced health that it gives you, the freedom from medical costs and medical expenses and medical problems that it gives you are so worth it that you just have to adjust your priorities. I think, where do I want to spend the money that my true quality of life will be most supported? We're advertising teaches us to buy stuff we don't need, makes us think we need stuff that we don't need. I think it's very important as people that we be able to distinguish between wants and needs. Wants are more superficial things or more extraneous things. They're not bad or wrong, but they're not basic. They're not fundamental. We do have fundamental basic needs. Clean air, clean water, healthy food are among them. And that's where our money should be going. Mm-hmm. And that's where our attention should be going so that we can expand the numbers of people who have access to clean air and clean water and healthy food and decent housing and so forth, rather than putting our attention and our energy and our time and our money into acquiring status symbols and ornaments and gadgets and stuff that really is just ego attachments rather than true needs.
You know, you really are speaking from experience here. I know in the New Good Life, you talk about how when you lived on Salt Spring Island in the 1970s, that was after you had abandoned the Baskin-Robbins lifestyle, and you grew 90% of your own food. You decided to have no livestock because you didn't want to kill animals for food. You also say that when you see a wild bird in flight, your instinct is not to grab a gun and shoot and kill it, but to appreciate its beauty and understand its place in the web of life. What further words of wisdom can you convey to people who don't get that yet, that all the animals around us are a part of nature and deserve to live?
Well, you know, I've often been told, well, the Bible says we are given dominion over animals, so we can do what we like with them. They're here on this earth for us to eat and to use in other ways. I'm not a Bible scholar, and I don't try to argue theology with anybody, but I do raise this question. What does dominion mean? Let's say I have two sons, and I go out for the evening, and as I leave, I tell the older one that he's in charge while I'm gone, and I tell the younger one, behave, you know, do what your older brother says, don't try not to make too much of a mess, you know, have fun, enjoy yourself, but be safe, and take care of each other. I am in effect giving the older one dominion over the younger one while I'm gone, am I not? But I don't expect to come home a few hours later and find out that the older boy has cooked and eaten the younger one, or done some bizarre animal experiment on him, you know, to his detriment. If he had, did something like that, I'd be really pissed. And I think that we have a responsibility as the given our intelligence. Sometimes I wonder about our intelligence, frankly, as a species. But clearly, we have capacities for insight and reflection and awareness that are extraordinary. But they have to be matched by conscience, by accountability and responsibility, so that we are truly stewards of a healthy and balanced ecosystem, so that we take the lives of animals, who, after all, draw breath from the same source as we do, seriously, and learn to live with reverence for all of life. Until we do that, we will be haunted by our own unconsciousness and by the impact, the cruelty, the suffering that we visit upon other animals will return to us for certain. Mm-hmm. That's the law. That is the cycle, and that's how life works. It is reciprocal. It is mutual. We are interdependent, and how we treat other animals comes back to us as our own experience. As a species, we seem to be slow to learn this, and it comes in stages, and some of us feel it more strongly than others, but we can all question our life choices and ask whether they are in alignment with our compassion, with the truth and meaning and strength and beauty in our own hearts, and with our desires to create a healthy world for all to enjoy. The short-term thinking, the indulgence, the selfishness, the arrogance, the ignorance, it all has to go, and we need to grow up, and I hope and pray that we do in time.
Thank you for that. That was just amazing. You know, your words really resonate with me, and I'm sure Joanne as well. Last year, I saw the film Julie and Julia, which chronicles the culinary life of Julia Child and showcases, for lack of a better word, the butchering of animals that was fairly central to her way of cooking. Can you tell us what it was like when you took the real Julia Child later in life to a veal production facility? What was her reaction?
Well, we were on a panel together at a conference in Pennsylvania, and I happened to know that there were veal barns in the vicinity, and I invited her. I said, "Would she like to go visit?" She said, "No, she wasn't interested." But I kind of pestered her and charmed her, and I said, "Look, just think of it as a fact-finding mission. You know, don't have to make a judgment about it. You just want to know more about the product you're serving and cooking and advocating." So she went, and it was the typical place for veal, which is really horrible, but it wasn't. It was par for the course, is what I'm trying to say. It wasn't a bad example. It was the real thing that's done. And when she went in, she got very quiet, and she crossed her arms in front of her and got this stern look on her face. And then she said, "I had no idea it was so severe."
Wow.
And I said, "Well, this is how it's done. And it's really sad, isn't it?" And she said, "Yes." She said, "I'm done now. I'm ready to go." She wanted to leave right away. And I said, "Okay." And we walked away, and I asked her a question, and she said, "I don't want to talk about it."
Wow.
And then a little bit later, I said, "Does this affect you in any way? Does this change you in any way?" And she said, "Yes. No more veal."
Ah, okay. Now the next trip should have been a trip to the local factory farm, slaughterhouse, dairy farm. Wow, that's quite an amazing story.
I know. I wish it could have been in the movie. It was very late in her life, and not too many people knew that she then ceased to cook veal or include recipes for it in her books and so forth. But she was a real foodie, and she had not. She thought vegetarians were over sentimental. She told me that she wasn't vegetarian friendly. But when she saw, even Julia Child, when she saw. How, as she put it, severe it was. She was appalled. And so would be anyone if they actually saw the degree of cruelty that goes on in modern factory farming. It's not just veal calves. It's beef cattle. It is dairy cows. It is poultry. It is laying hens for the eggs that we consume. The conditions are truly concentration camp-like. And I say that not with any disrespect whatsoever to the incalculable suffering that has taken place in the actual human concentration camps, but only to try to find an image that can even in the slightest convey the abominable, atrocious, deplorable treatment of animals that goes on routinely in the production of modern meat and dairy products and eggs.
Well, you say in The New Good Life that this question needs to be asked. Why is it that we call some animals pets and then turn around and call other animals dinner? Considering the horrific cruelties that you've been talking about, that the animals suffer who are turned into our dinner, what do you think is the answer to that? How is it that humans are compassionate towards some living species but not others?
Well, it takes the form of the fact that in the United States and Canada, the laws that we do have against cruelty to animals do not apply to animals destined for human consumption. Those animals are exempt from the rudimentary protections that those laws would otherwise provide. As a result of that, the industry routinely does things to animals that are called livestock that if you did them to a dog or to a cat, you'd be jailed. It would be a felony. But this is it's schizoid. Our cultural relationship to other animals is literally schizoid, in that we make this semantic distinction between animals that are we call pets or companions and animals that we call dinner or livestock, and we feel entitled by virtue of that semantic distinction to treat those animals that we use for food with any manner of cruelty as long as it lowers the price per pound. This is a disconnect. This is a very serious alienation in our thinking, in our actions, from the well-being of other animals, from the human-animal bond. It is a violation of the human-animal bond. And as such, it's doing us spiritually, emotionally, psychologically, physically, medically, environmentally, tremendous damage.
John, just switching gears a bit here, I'm curious as to what kinds of foods you enjoy to eat these days. Obviously, we know you're a vegan, but there are all types of vegans, and I was fascinated to read about how you used to spend just $300 a year on just beans and grains and then grow the rest of your fresh food from the garden or forage from your surroundings. You grew 90% of your own food. That was when you lived on Salt Spring Island in the 1970s. Are you eating basically the same way now, entirely on whole and unprocessed foods?
Yes, I am, although I eat more vegetables. You know, I live in California now, which is a warmer climate, and we can grow, more time of the year. And I appreciate that, frankly. I know that you're in D.C., and I love British Columbia. I lived there 15 years and still consider it basically a deep part of my home. I love visiting. I'm glad I'll be there soon. But I'm also appreciative of the longer growing season. So I eat a lot of veg. I probably eat more vegetables than anybody. I just love them. And the first thing I have in the morning, actually, I make vegetable juice with carrots and celery and apples and greens and cucumbers and peppers and beets and all kinds of vegetables go in there. And I make it every 3 or 4 days, keep it cold in the fridge. And then in the morning I tap a glass, I put a little bit of boiling water into it just to take the chill out of it, because I don't like to drink cold, cold things first thing. And I have that every day. And I love it.
That's awesome.
Huh?
Are you still a huge fan of kale, I'm wondering? In your book, you talked about how you loved it so much you almost called your son Kale.
I did. I almost did. That would have been silly, but it just showed how much I loved it. And when we were living on Salt Spring Island, we grew a lot of Siberian kale, which was a very hardy plant, and in the winter we'd go out, even if it was snowing, just knock the snow off the leaves and pick them. Just delicious. And kale and collard greens and mustard greens and even dandelion greens. There's a whole a plethora of dark green leafy vegetables that are tremendously nutritious. Mm-hmm. And people should eat a lot more of them than they do.
So you'll be appearing in Vancouver tomorrow at the Earth Save Canada Gala, which I know many people are really looking forward to. What will you be speaking about at the gala? And further to that, what projects are on the horizon for you in the future?
Well, I'll be speaking about everything we've been talking about and more. The agony and the ecstasy of the human experience right now on Earth, with the questions we're all living with. Sometimes we have answers, sometimes we don't. The importance is that we live honestly with the questions and authentically with them, and that our life express sincerely the answers that we can come up with as we go along. And how do we do that, and getting support from our culture to do that, and transforming our culture as we do that into an expression of a sustainable way of life, a thriving, joyful, creative, and socially just way of life. That's what I want. That's what a lot of us want, and I want it all. I want us all to have it. It's not enough for me. I made a decision very early in my life to move away from the entitlement and the wealth, the material wealth I've been born into, because it was dependent on suffering for its creation, and I didn't want that. And I think there lives in the human heart, in each of us, the desire for a better world, and a more honest way of life, and I'll be talking about that and how we can meet those challenges in today's world as effectively as possible.
Thank you so much for coming on the show today, John, to share your wisdom and insights with us. You can find more about John Robbins at his personal website, johnrobbins.info, and I encourage you to also check out his new book called The New Good Life, Living Better Than Ever in an Age of Less. And if you're in the Vancouver area, you can see John Robbins live in person at the Earth Save Canada fundraising gala tomorrow, October the 23rd. Just go to tasteofhealth.earthsave.ca to find out more. Thank you so much, John.
Thank you very much.
That was a great interview, Allison. I'm definitely looking forward to the Taste of Health tomorrow.
Yep, that's going to be a good time for sure.
Just want to remind our listeners, don't forget to join us on Facebook, Animal Voices Vancouver. Follow us on Twitter, Animal Voices YVR, or drop us a line at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. And of course, if you haven't already, please subscribe to our podcast, Animal Voices Vancouver, on iTunes, so you can download Animal Voices on your iPod and listen to us whenever, wherever you go.
And please join our Facebook group. I'm always checking the numbers on there. We have 344, and then it'll go down to like 343. And then 344. Like, we're not really making any headway here on the numbers.
Go on there just to win the books, right? Like, you know, get a great draw.
The book contest.
That's right. Win the book. What's the book called?
It's called The New Good Life, and it's by John Robbins, and it's a really great book. I've been reading it, and we have a copy to give away. So get on our Facebook page and click on the discussions tab, and under there's a topic started that is for the book contest. Just put your name there. Make sure you enter by next Friday at 9 a.m. And we'll be drawing on the show next Friday, October the 29th. And if you don't have Facebook, just send us an email, radioanimalvoices@gmail.com, with your entry. Just put contest entry in the subject line.
That's right. Next week, I'll be interviewing Rob Bigwood, one of the top-ranked arm wrestlers in the Northeast and among the top 20 overall in the United States. He has won over 40 state arm wrestling tournaments across the U.S. Rob Bigwood is a vegan animal rights activist, and he arm wrestles with a PETA shirt on. And my only regret is that this is a radio show rather than a TV interview with the full visuals. Yes. Rob is 225 pounds of pure muscles, and if anyone thinks vegans are weak and skinny, they really need to check out Rob's photo on blog.rbigwood.com. And I'm very excited for this interview.
How did you find him? I've never heard of this person, Joanne.
Check out your Veg News from a couple of issues ago.
Really?
I mean, he is so huge. Like, even his face is like perfect features, and he just like huge. He looks like Superman. He looks like a superhero.
That's awesome.
Yeah, he's really great. Before we go, I just want to remind our listeners that it is our fall pledge drive period, and if you like what you heard today, you can help keep this show on the air by becoming a member of this community supported station. You can also become a monthly donor, or even just make a one-time donation as low as $5. Just go to cooperadio.org and click on the membership form, and you will be able to make your pledge there. You can also pledge by calling 604-684-8494 extension 230, or mail a check to Cooperadio at 110-360 Columbia Street in Vancouver. And we're going to play a public service announcement, and after that we'll leave you with a song entitled So Many Reasons by the vegan band Green Beings off of their Electric Green CD. You have been listening to Animal Voices on Co-op Radio 102.7 FM.
Talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.
Everyone's talking about it. Don't be left out of the conversation. Join us here at CFRO 102.7 FM. Between October 15th and 29th, Co-op Radio hits the air with its annual fall membership drive. Support Vancouver's community station. Become a member or donate 604-684-8494 or visit cooperadio.org. Join the Co-op Radio conversation. Support Vancouver's commercial-free station.
We don't want to win on the back of a book of excuses.